Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
That's actually kind of an interesting metaphysical question. This isn't a talk, but, you know, what are you doing the rest of your life is kind of a good question in this teaching. And the answer is whatever my consciousness decides I'm going to do, really, if you think about it. And right now, while we're doing what we're doing here, if you go out the hall and went that way to that room, we got a bunch of the kids from about this big to about this big that are learning that they can create the life they want and that God is within them and all these other things that we never learned and we're trying to figure out right now. And if you go down that end of the hall out there and turn left, we got a group of 8 or 10 of our teens that are in there discussing the same thing. So that's kind of what this teaching is for. It's great that we get something out of it, but the more we can teach the kids, the better off it's going to be. The better off we're all going to be. So, all right, that's my soapbox. Now let's do this part. As most of us here are aware, the institution of religion, and by that I mean formalized religion, has been abused ever since the first caveman started worshiping the moon. Then he went outside and beat up the guy in the cave next door because he was worshiping the sun. It's been going on that long. Right up to the present day, as we know, all you have to do is look at the news. There are people killing people who belong to other religions, and even killing people who belong to their religion with a slightly different slant. And they are doing it all in the name of God, so to speak, which whatever that's supposed to mean. There are people who go to their church or their synagogue or their mosque or their temple every single week who say all the prayers the way they're supposed to say them according to their own religious denomination. They read all the right books. They listen to the talks. They say the right things. But their actual behavior outside of their place of worship bears no resemblance at all to what they claim to believe. We see that all the time. There's a story I really like. I think I told it years ago, but it's a great story, and it's about a man here in Atlanta. He was driving to work one morning, and he came to a traffic light that turned yellow, and he stopped. Now, obviously, he wasn't from Atlanta, because Atlanta, there's four more cars there, too. But anyway, he stopped at a yellow light. Any other way, there was a woman behind him in a big SUV with Cobb County plates, who was apparently in quite a hurry, who thought that both of them should have been able to get through the light. So she slams on her brakes behind him. She starts blowing her horn, giving him the finger out the window, screaming obscenities at him, all this stuff. She was obviously extremely upset. All of a sudden, a police car pulled up with the lights flashing, and the officer jumped out of his patrol car with a gun in hand, told the woman, out of the car, put your hands on the car. He handcuffed her and took her to the station. She was in shock. So a couple hours later, she's sitting in this cell, and somebody comes and says, come with me, and they take her up to the front desk where her stuff is, and they said, you're free to go. And the officer who had arrested her was standing there, and he said, I feel it necessary to explain what happened. We checked on you, and you're free to go, but I was driving behind you in your car when you were, you know, behind the other gentleman, and I noticed the bumper stickers on your car that said, peace is the answer. God is love. Coexist, you know, that cute little thing. What would Jesus do was on there too. So when I saw the way you were reacting to the car in front of you, I obviously assumed you had stolen the car. That was so. That's the way a lot of people practice their religion. And that's the reason why so many of us in here have decided to walk a less traditional spiritual path, where we don't have to worry so much about rules and rituals and those kind of things, and we can concentrate on doing what's really important to us, which is creating a closer connection with the God of our understanding, as we understand God, and creating a better life for ourselves and a better world for us all. You see, we believe here in this teaching that there are a few basic, simple, spiritual rules of living and being that apply to everyone. But in our view of spirituality, we don't call them rules, we don't call them commandments, we call them spiritual laws. spiritual laws, because rules are usually something that's imposed upon us from the outside to control our behavior, while laws, by which I mean in this case natural spiritual laws, are just the way things work. It's just the way everything's been set up. Now, the interesting thing about these laws is if we work with them, all right, they appear to work in our favor. All the different laws, you can look at different lists in all the metaphysical books. But if we supposedly work against them, which we can't do any more than you can work against gravity, so you're always working with them, they still work if we're not using them correctly. They work by appearing not to work. All right, so think about that for a minute. So when these laws seem to be working against us, there's nothing personal involved. We're not being punished. There's no penalties. It's just the logical consequences of our more unfortunate thoughts, beliefs, and behaviors playing out in this physical universe where we live. That's all it is. Now, we may not know that's what's happening, but that's what it is. Now, one of the most well-known and honored of these spiritual laws, the one I want to talk about today, has come to be known as the Golden Rule. All of us have heard it in various forms. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Most of us have been hearing that for a lot of years. Or you've got the reciprocal version that says, do not do to others what you would not want them to do to you, which is basically the same thing. Now, this is a very ancient idea. It goes way, way back. And the language varies from culture to culture, but the idea remains the same. And this law exists in some form or another in virtually every religion and every major moral philosophy as something that everyone agrees to, at least theoretically. I'll get into that in a minute. In fact, most of us learned about it as children before we even knew what it was called. When we said something mean or did something bad to one of our siblings, my poor little younger brothers, you know, to whatever it is, or we do it to one of our friends, and our mother or father, instead of yelling at us or spanking us, they did something worse. They made us feel guilty. They took us aside and they said, how would you like it if someone did that to you? And that kind of logic works very well, even with a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old. Now, I said it goes way back. Historically, the first written example of what we call the Golden Rule showed up in the sayings, the Analects of a gentleman by the name of Kung Fu Tzu. That was his Chinese name. Most of us know him as Confucius. We've all heard of him. And he lived and taught around 500 BC, which was basically the same time that the Buddha was doing his teaching in India. But it's also seen in the Hindu religion, going back longer than that, the early Egyptians, the Romans, the Wiccans, okay, everybody. It's in the Talmud of Judaism. It's in the Quran of Islam. And it's in all sorts of different Native American spirituality. So it's a very, very broad idea. There's something about this idea that strikes a common chord in all of us, no matter what our external spiritual practice looks like. It even has an official name, not the Golden Rule. The official name for this practice in philosophy is reciprocity. Okay, like reciprocal, all right, reciprocity, okay? And it is the foundation, not just of the Golden Rule, but of almost every other spiritual law. That's how important it is. For example, the law of attraction. What we think, we attract. That's reciprocity. The law of giving and receiving. As we give, so shall we receive. The law of non-resistance. All right? Whatever we fight grows stronger. There's a commonality in all of these things. Emerson says in his essays, if you want a friend, be a friend. The poet Rumi says, whoever acts with respect will get respect. So we see this everywhere. However, and this is kind of where the idea for the talk came from, even with something as simple and self-evident as the Golden Rule, things are not always as simple as they seem. For some people, the Golden Rule is just a religious commandment. I'm doing it because that's what God tells me to do. For other people, it's more of a philosophical question, sort of an intellectual argument, but not necessarily something to be lived. But for a very select few people, going back throughout history, and these are all the great spiritual teachers, it is a simple but profound expression of a personal commitment. It's not just a rule to follow. It's an internalized, embodied, personal commitment to the principles of peace, justice, fairness, love for your fellow human beings, and all those things. For example, One of the points of debate or confusion about the Golden Rule is, even though it seems like a universal principle that applies to everybody, it still depends upon the perspective of the person who's using it. All right? Because we don't always use it the same. In other words, some people assume that the Golden Rule means that everyone wants the same things and all people are alike. But to use a recent example, how did that work for us in 2003 when the U.S. went into Iraq? Okay, we assumed that since we want Western-style democracy in this country, that's what everybody wants. Okay, and I'm not trying to get political here. I'm just trying to use a contemporary example. So we were willing to do something that has created a really, really disastrous result, I guess you could call it, what we've created as sort of an unintended consequence, in order to force people or to give them something that we thought they ought to want that most of them didn't, all right? Now, some of us assume that whatever we want for ourselves is good for us, so if it's good for us, it must be good for everybody else, which doesn't take into consideration the fact that what we want is not always good for us, even if we think it is, so it may not be good for other people. So that's an opportunity for us to examine the things we think are good for us and see if they really are something that would be good for other people. And a classic example of this would be parents who live in poverty and they want their children to stay in the same neighborhood and live in poverty because if it was good enough for me, it ought to be good enough for you. And you can all look at your own examples, all right? Another common misinterpretation of the Golden Rule is to treat others as they want you to treat them. A little bit different, okay? This implies that people should be able to tell us how we're supposed to treat them, no matter what we think about what they're doing, okay? That's how we end up having other people manipulate us. We've all been in that kind of situation. I want someone else to be responsible for my happiness, is what they're saying. But what most of us have realized is that when someone tells me that I should be responsible for their happiness, I stop and I think, and I have to find another way to deal with it, okay? Just like I don't want them to be responsible for my happiness. Because we've all allowed ourselves more than once to be manipulated by other people's desires that are not in harmony with the way we want to live. That's something that I've learned in this teaching. Then there are the purely cynical perspectives. The people who say the ones who have the gold make the rules. There are people that believe that. There are people who say, do unto others, then leave. All right, that's another one. That's obviously a negative attitude that's not going to get them very far. But there's a much more subtle and selfish interpretation, which is this. Listen carefully. Do unto others the same as they do unto you. Sounds about like the same, pretty close. The language is only slightly different. But it isn't the same at all. Because that kind of thinking says, I'm not going to treat anyone else any better than they treat me. I'm not going to help them any more than they help me. And I won't be any more respectful for them than they are to me. You see what that sounds like when you start to put it like that? Okay, it's like keeping score. A lot of people use the Golden Rule, they think they're using it, to keep score. It assumes that most people are selfish, so I don't need to waste my time and energy on people that aren't nice to me. All right? Of course, if someone does something nice and helpful to me, I will return the favor, equitably, so to speak. But if someone does something bad to me, according to this interpretation, then I have permission to do something bad to them. That's where it leads, which ends up with what? An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth? That old idea, and we see where that has gotten us. In fact, if you look at all the politics that's going on right now, no matter what side you happen to be on, that's exactly what's going on. They did this to me, so I'm going to do that to them. They're not helping me here, I'm not going to help them. And it's not going to be solved as long as we stay at that level of consciousness. All right? You don't have to be a spiritually enlightened being to see that that's not a spiritual approach to life. And you can tell that it's not spiritual. You know how you can tell when something is not spiritual? It doesn't work. It's really that simple. It doesn't work. Instead of creating balance and harmony between people, which is what the Golden Rule is meant to do, this kind of an attitude, this kind of misinterpretation creates imbalance disharmony, lack of trust, and an endless cycle of getting even. That's the big problem in the world today. And in most cases, all sides, however many there are, justify their behavior because of what the other people are doing to them. That's what's going on with the Palestinians and the Israelis, with the Democrats and the Republicans, with all sorts of different polarized groups in the world. I mean, I may be naive here, but one would think, because we are all a product of the same God, agreed? Can I get an amen? Okay, good. All right. That we're all bleeding the same color blood, pretty much. We all live on the same big blue ball that's spinning through space and has been for a long, long time. You would think that we could find and use some very basic, simple spiritual belief that we could all agree on when dealing with one another. I mean, how hard can that be? Now, the golden rule is a good start. And we've got kind of a common ground once we all understand what we mean. But rules are not the answer. Understanding is. Rules are not the answer. Understanding is. In other words, in trying to understand why people can't seem to get along, the problem is not that God created us all different and we have to figure out what all our differences are. The problem is we don't see that we're all the same at the level of spirit. We're different colors, we're different heights, we're different genders, we're different nationalities, religions, all this other stuff. But at the core level, what we call the God level, there is no difference. There is no difference. Now, if we continue to focus on our differences, we can still get past it. Cooperation is still possible, but it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of tolerance and compromise and all those things, which we don't seem to do very well. We don't. But if we can learn to see each other as one, to see the whole universe as one in fact, but to see each other as one and the same, it doesn't take anything extra. It doesn't, because I know that anything I do to you, I'm also doing to me. That's the real depth of wisdom of the golden rule. So I'll be a lot more careful. If I hurt you, then I hurt me. That's what we got to do with the environment, the same stuff. I'll also recognize that helping me, helping you, helps me. Okay? So it's all something we need to understand. But the real leap forward, what they call the quantum leap in wisdom, so to speak, comes when we decide to proactively, not reactively, to proactively help and support and honor everyone all the time, no matter who they are or how they're responding to us. That's where the leap in wisdom comes. Because that way we don't just do nice things because we receive nice things in return. Instead, our belief and our behavior starts to create a world of mutual trust that we can all appreciate and enjoy. That's what it is. That's how we begin the process of creating a world that is safe, prosperous, fun for everyone, and more advanced in every way we can imagine. Because once we become advanced spiritually, everything else follows. Everything else follows. So a different interpretation of the golden rule, what a friend of mine, if she's in here, I don't know, Jeannie, wherever you are, said we might call the platinum rule. I kind of like that, okay? It's what I call the religious science interpretation. That's a technical name for this teaching if you're new here. This is my interpretation. Do good unto others no matter what. Do good unto others no matter what. Because we know that what we put out, the reciprocity I was talking about, we get back. Why? Because it's a law. What we put out, we get back. It doesn't matter how they react or respond. I may not get it back from them. If I'm giving love to everybody, I'm going to have all the love of my life from somewhere. From somewhere, okay? Now, even if we don't like their response, eventually, if we stay centered, things will change for the better. They do. It's a law. That's the way it works. It'll be a win-win. We'll all end up with a better result. Of course, we have to realize that our good and their good may not be exactly the same. It may not look alike, but that's okay. It is. We live in a universe of infinite variety. So your good and my good may be completely different and still be wonderful, yours for you and mine for me. All right? They don't have to be the same for us to be happy. They just don't. Now, we're talking here, of course, about non-physical exchange. That's very important, all right? Because the spiritual is non-physical. We're talking about the non-physical gifts of love, respect, understanding, and we're talking about doing it consistently, not just in the way we do it, being nice all the time, but in the fact that we give it to everyone without exception, under all circumstances, all the time. All circumstances, all the time. That's why instead of doing for people what we think they want, a more loving and respectful approach would be to offer them our complete, unconditional support and love, and ask him how we could best provide it. And if we're willing to do it and it fits with our values, then we do it. If they like help and we're willing and able to provide it, then we help them. On the other hand, and this is very important, if we think they need help, but they tell us they don't want it, then we need to step back and honor their wishes. This gets into compassion, which I'm going to talk about next week. Because sometimes the most helpful and respectful thing we can do for another person is to leave them alone. Just like sometimes we want to be left alone. All right? The truth is, sometimes we all need a little alone time, a little processing time, especially when we make a bad decision, to sort of figure out how we got into that situation. That's how we learn. I talked about that last week. Okay, to bring it so we can bring ourselves back to our spiritual center. If someone else steps in and interferes with our process, even if they do it with the best of intentions, which they frequently do, because they wouldn't like to go what we're going through, it may deprive us of a very valuable opportunity to learn and grow. There's a great story. It's a classic story, and it's about a man after a storm. He went out in his backyard, and a branch had broken off of a tree, and on that branch was a fully developed cocoon. So he took the branch carefully into his house, and he put it in the kitchen window where the sun could be on it, and he sort of looked at it every day. And one day, a few days later, he noticed a tiny slit in the side, and there was some movement underneath. It looked like the butterfly was struggling to get out. So he took it over to the kitchen table and he took a very fine X-Acto knife and he gently opened the split a little bit more and a little bit more, and the butterfly slid out of the opening, flip-flopped once or twice, and died. And it died because the struggle to get out of the cocoon fills their wings, the tubes in their wings, with fluid and makes the wings solid so they can fly. You see the analogy here? Very, very similar, okay? So the man assumed if he were trapped in a cocoon, he'd certainly want someone to help him out. Sounds silly, but that's what happened, all right? But it didn't work out the way he planned. In the same way, we may know someone who is in what appears to us to be an unhappy relationship. Anybody know someone? A friend? Several of us, okay? And we might give them our help and advice based on what we think they ought to do or what we would like or not like in a relationship. But we have no idea what's going on in their consciousness. They may need to learn through this relationship in a painful way to create a relationship better that will be the greatest they could ever imagine. That's what they may need. Or we may have someone close to us, family member who's having financial difficulties, and we just write them a check. Might help, because that's what we'd want. On the other hand, money may not be the problem. Money may not be the problem. The best way for us to help anyone is to honor their divinity, their humanity, and their spiritual path. And their spiritual path. Just as we expect other people to honor those things in us. In fact, in the Shinto religion, which is an offshoot of Japanese Buddhism, some of you are familiar, it is said, the heart of the person before you is a mirror. See in this mirror your own form. Very, very one of those Eastern religion kind of things, you know. That's the way we need to look at people before we offer them our help or our advice. Because if we can look into someone as they are and see the presence of God in them and in the world around them, the God that we see is the same God that exists in us. That's what makes the golden rule work. In fact, our ability to see the presence of God is actually God as us seeing itself everywhere it looks. That's what oneness means. That's what it has to mean. Now, that's a hard concept to grasp until we let go of our belief in separation. You get it? Until we let go of our belief in separation. When we start finally thinking this way, the golden rule kind of mentality, in places outside of church and at times other than Sunday morning, then instead of living according to the golden rule, we can start living in what we might call a golden age. And that may sound a little woo-woo to some of you, and I'm not real woo-woo, so it's not. It may even sound a little bit naive, some people would say, but I assure you it is a practical and intelligent and spiritual outcome that is completely possible for us to create. No matter what's going on in the news, this is possible for us to do. So using the golden rule, the basic concept of the golden rule as a central idea, as kind of a seed, if you will, we can begin to grow this seed, all right, of mutual respect and mutual support into a world where wars disappear, prosperity flourishes for everyone, and things like hunger and war and homelessness and all that are a thing of the past. That's what we can do with the golden rule as a spiritual core. And when we finally do this, you and I may not be alive when it happens, but some of these kids are going to be who are out there, I promise. And we're all standing around with people of different colors, different races, different languages, and we're all getting along. The only question we're going to ask ourselves is, why did it take so long? It really, really is. Anyway, as I like to say every week, this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. Thank you. All right, let's take a moment now. A lot of ideas, all of us hear differently, react differently. We have different things going on. So I invite you to take the ideas that resonated with you, set aside the others for later. And let's know this together. There is truly one life, and we are all living it. Each one of us is life's recognition of itself, and that life is wisdom, it is power, it is creativity, it is abundance, it is health and wholeness, and it is love. All of these are the qualities of this one life that we call God, Spirit, whatever. It is invisible, but what these things create and what they foster are very visible. The physical world in which we exist, with our physical body, with our cars and our buildings and our computers, and the money we exchange and the debates we get into over our differences, all of these things are effects. They come from ideas which are invisible, and the best effects come from the best ideas, and the best ideas come from spirit. So each one of us, not just in this moment right now, but every moment, we feel that quality of spirit inside of us. We feel that awareness of the same spirit in me as the spirit in you and every other person. And when we begin to see division or separation or conflict, we recognize that that is not an idea that needs to continue. And we start the change within. We start the change by no longer seeing separation or division in our own mind or our own heart, and we begin to stop seeing it or accepting it in our own life. We allow others to be the expression of God that they are, recognizing that God expresses itself in an infinite variety of different ways. And we start to allow ourselves to be more open with others, to express ourselves honestly but respectfully all the time. Knowing this, this is how we begin to create a life that is in balance, not just around us or in our own family or neighborhood or city, but everywhere. As we do this, It is an idea, an invisible idea with no boundaries that begins to spread. And it spreads from us. It touches the same idea in others who have opened themselves to spiritual truth. And we begin to see the world change. We don't worry about when or how. We just allow this peace in the world to begin to spread. And knowing this, we give thanks. Deep, grateful thanks for this awareness. For understanding this truth of what life is, what we are, what God is, and what the world could be. We accept this idea as a truth greater than we could ever imagine, and we stretch our imagination to fit it. And recognizing that as we begin to know this, it begins to outpicture in the world we see. I accept this truth as my own, for me, everyone in this room, and every other person, and I allow my ideas to go forth and recreate themselves abundantly. I accept this, I embrace it. Join me in saying, and so it is.